ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text number 5.
Yat Sankhyai Prapyate Sthanam Tat Yogair Api Gamyate Ekam Sankhyam Cha Yogam Cha Yapashyati Sapashyati.
Translation: one who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore see analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, seeing things as they are. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The real purpose of philosophical research is to find the ultimate goal of life. Since the ultimate goal of life is self-realization, there is no difference between the conclusions reached by these two processes. By Sankhya philosophy, Sankhya philosophical research, one comes to the conclusion that a living entity is not part and parcel of the material world, but of the supreme spirit whole. Consequently, the spirit soul has nothing to do with the material world. His actions must be in some relation with the Supreme. When he acts in Krishna consciousness, he is actually in his constitutional position. In the first process, Sankhya, one has to become detached from matter. And in the devotional yoga process, one has to attach himself to the work of Krishna consciousness. Factually, both processes are the same, although superficially one process appears to be involve detachment, and the other process appears to involve attachment. Detachment from matter and attachment to Krishna are one and the same. One who can see this sees things as they are. So you're studying Bhagavad Gita sequentially, yes? Verse, each night? Okay, so what's chapter 5 about, those of you who have been attending the class? Who's been attending the class? Nobody wants to raise their hand. What's the chapter about? Huh? Karma Yoga. That's the title. What's the chapter about? What's the subject matter that's being discussed so far? Huh? Sankhya Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. Okay. Can you expand on that a little bit? How are they the same? Well, why do, if they're the same, why do they have different names?
One is finding the roots and another is watering the roots.
Okay, that's an interesting one. You've had a busy day and I'm just kind of teasing with you to get your be attentive to the subject matter. That's what's going on. Goal is the same. Process is different. Okay. What does Sankhya mean? Analytical study. And what does yoga mean? Linking with the Supreme. So, we're getting there. So there's one question that appears three times in Bhagavad Gita. The third time is a slightly different presentation. The first two are almost the same presentation. What's that question? Okay. And it's phrased a little differently each time. Okay, let's go back. Have you ever had the experience of trying to explain something to somebody that's so obvious and they just don't get it? You ever had that experience? And you know why they don't get it? Because they don't want to get it. Or they have a predisposition for something else. So it's like filters. You know, it's just like filters that are so thick that nothing gets through. Because inside they already think that they know, and so, you know, forget trying to explain something because I already know. And what's in that situation is happening here. Arjuna has this predisposition. What's his predisposition? I don't want to fight. I've considered it very carefully. Here's my six reasons why I don't want to fight. But now, Krishna, what do you consider best for me to do? And Krishna tells him to fight. And he said, oh, why do you ask me to fight? Because I have this predisposition to not. So he asks it. Here's, we'll read the translation of the first verse of chapter 3, the first verse of chapter 5. So we'll get a picture of what we're talking about. And he even uses like really harsh adjectives. Chapter 3, text number 1. O Janardan, O Keshava, why do you want me to engage in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work? Because intelligence is better than fruitive work, the predisposition of Arjuna, and which means the predisposition of a lot of people that are conditioned souls in this world, which is a lot of people, think that the purpose of knowledge is detachment. And so Arjuna is ready for detachment. He's ready to, okay, I'm a Kshatriya, and for my maintenance, there's only this proper way of maintenance, and that is by ruling, and by protecting those that I'm ruling, they give taxes, and that's my maintenance, that's my livelihood. So I can't be a Kshatriya without killing all my relatives and all these people. Then I'll just stop being a Kshatriya. I'll just go to the forest and live in a cave and chant Om and read Vedanta Sutra and become fixed in knowledge and be detached from being a Kshatriya. Because we've tried everything. Krishna, you know, we've tried peace offers, and we tried, you know, all kinds of things. Okay, let them rule the planet. I'll become a brahmana. I'll become a mendicant. I'll just stop being a Kshatriya. I'll live by some other means. I'll be detached. And Krishna's giving all these wonderful things about Bodhi Yoga, the value of knowledge. And at the end of all this wonderful build-up, yes, knowledge. And he points to the battlefield and says, now stand and fight. Wait a minute. You were saying knowledge is better than fruitive work. What to speak of this ghastly warfare that's like even not even nice fruitive work. So why are you encouraging me this way? So Krishna gives Karma Yoga, chapter 3. And then he gives transcendental knowledge. And in that transcendental knowledge, Krishna is glorifying. Knowledge is so wonderful that it can carry one across the other side of material existence. You can cross the ocean of material existence in the boat of transcendental knowledge. Arjuna is going, yeah, knowledge. Knowledge is so wonderful that It's like fire that can burn unlimited amounts of fuel. Yes, knowledge. Knowledge. Now, there's the battlefield. Stand and fight. In knowledge. Stand and fight. So the beginning of chapter 5, he asks the same question. First of all, you ask me to renounce work. Well, he didn't actually ask him to renounce work. He asked him to renounce the fruits of work. Oh. And then again, you recommend work and devotion. Now, could you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? So which is better? Knowledge and detachment, or, you know, read between the lines and you get the impersonal approach to the absolute and the impersonal approach to life. So detachment through knowledge, or working in devotion, as if working in devotion is absent knowledge. Oh no. Working in devotion is fortified. It's given strength by proper knowledge of Krishna. So Krishna says, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. But of the two, work in devotion is better than renunciation of work. Oh. So then he explains. And this is an explanation of the Sankhya process, the previous verse. Only the ignorant speak of devotional service. Prabhupada puts in brackets karma yoga. I thought devotional service is bhakti yoga. And karma yoga is, you know, giving up the fruits of your work. The bhakti is not just giving up the fruits of your work, it's working in devotion, and automatically the fruits of work are included as a subset. Well, Prabhupada is doing what a great acharya should do and does do, is this karma yoga sense is a subset of the devotional process, and so he just goes there. It's devotional service. Because a devotee will also offer the fruits of his work to Krishna, because that's just a subset of offering everything to Krishna or living one's life in devotion to Krishna. So he calls it as bhakti yoga. Or devotional service. But some people, so only the ignorant speak of devotional service, karma yoga, as being different from the analytical study of the material world, Sankhya. Where did we hear this word Sankhya before in Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita. 39. What does Krishna say in chapter 2, verse 39? He says to Arjuna, thus far I've described to you Sankhya, now I'm going to describe to you Buddhi. In this verse he's saying they're actually the same, only the ignorant speak of them as different. In other words, why is Krishna taking Arjuna down the path of some impersonal process? He's not, is the answer. It's just a subset of, it's a preliminary subset of bhakti. Because in order to engage in bhakti, you have to know what's what. You have to know the difference between matter and spirit and the controller of both. So it's just a subset of bhakti, like the example that you gave, finding the root and then watering it. So Sankhya is this analytical study. Just like with the Bhagavatam verses that we're reading, where Narada is speaking to King Prachinibari And it's Sankhya. And that Sankhya section that's in the beginning part of chapter 2, you know, this is the soul and this is matter. And then there's a little bit more in chapter 7. These are categories of matter. And distinct is the soul. That's also Sankhya. And then there's one that's the source and the controller of both. That's Krishna. Categories, matter, spirit, and controller of both. And then chapter 13, what is Prakriti and what is Purusha? What is Jnanam and what is Gyanam? So what's matter and what is spirit? It's an expanded version of Sankhya. So here it's just mentioning Sankhya, knowledge, for the purpose of detachment, because that's the issue. Arjuna wants to be detached from being a kshatriya, or detached from performance of his duty, or performance of work. He's wanting karma sannyas, and Krishna is saying no. Karma pala tyag. Not karma sannyas or karma tyag. Renunciation of the fruits of work. Because the complete sense of renunciation of fruits of work is bhakti. But in its less than mature stage, it's karma yoga. That's what this chapter is. So you need to know the difference between matter and spirit in order to be detached from matter and go to the side of spirit. Those who actually are learned say that one who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. That's the previous verse. So this evening's verse, one who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees that analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, sees things as they are. Well, they're on the same level in the sense that they're on the spiritual plane, but of the two, one is better. Same question comes in chapter 12. Only it's really explicit. It's, you know, which is better, worshiping your personal or worshiping your impersonal feature? It's a very clear question. It's a very clear answer. Worshiping my personal feature is better. Now that you ask, it's better. The other is also possible. It's very, 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 very difficult for those who embody, and that's most people, they're embodied. And to fix one's mind on the impersonal is very difficult. So there's two reasons. One is more difficult, and the other is if you're fixing your mind upon the personal, then you're getting the assistance of Krishna. So it's like really simple math. Which is better? A, your own effort. Or B, your effort plus Krishna's help. Math is easy. And the bhakti process has the second one. So it's better. It's natural. Therefore it's easier. The other is unnatural. It's very difficult. But the Krishna factor is there in bhakti. It's just not present in trying to fix your mind on the impersonal feature. So those three, it's significant because why does Arjuna ask the same question three times? The reason is because people in this world don't get it. And the reason they don't get it is they don't want to get it. Same reason. Because there's a predisposition. We're in this material world because we have an issue with Krishna. We got an attitude problem. And Krishna is the object of that attitude problem. We don't want to surrender to Krishna. So Krishna doesn't start with surrender unto me. That's the conclusion. There's all this other stuff to get there. And three times Arjuna's asking, well, why? But, you know, he's Krishna's dearmost friend, so he really doesn't have a problem. But he's, by example, showing us what our problems are. You know, it's much easier to be detached, although that has its sacrifice. It's easier to be detached than to be devoted to Krishna. Just like we were speaking upstairs, just this group of devotees. You know, we receive some instruction. So there's a few options. One is, I don't pay any attention to it. Then another is, well, I do it some of the time, but not too much of the time. And then another is, I'm pretty consistent with some instructions I receive, but not all the time. Now, what's all the time? It's when there's devotion. You're not doing it just because it's for yourself. You're doing it out of love. And then there's the greater strength than your own strength. You know, your effort plus Krishna's mercy. Much stronger. And it's something that's intrinsic to the soul. We want love. We all feel the same thing. We have so much love to give, I just can't find where to put it. And everybody feels the same thing. It's really silly. And we're so much wanting to be loved. When someone comes and offers a loving relationship, we don't know what to do with it. Huh? You must have some motive. What's your program here? What's your angle? What's your motivation? What do you want from me? We're defensed. We don't like that. So Krishna is doing a very gradual program here with Arjuna. And the impersonalists, they really like Sankhya philosophy. Ooh, because it differentiates them from those people that don't know Sankhya philosophy. I'm Brahman. But you're also Brahman, you're just in your ignorance. But I'll teach you all about Brahman, and you can become one too. One also, not one too. We can't have two, we can only have one. It's subject to their interpretation. And those that are accustomed to Sanskrit, to speculation, they like it. It's like fun. I attended a home program once. It was a Bengali family living in America. And it's an older couple. So they invited all their older Bengali friends. And they, you know, there's a devotee that is Bengali and he sang very nice Bengali bhajans. They loved that. And another devotee sang very nice Hare Krishna melody. They liked that. And spoke Bhagavad Gita. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, one older fellow said, can you give us some interpretations of Bhagavad Gita? I knew where he was coming from because it's just like he's used to hearing this means that. And that means the other thing, and the other thing means something else. Oh, that was very... Could you do that one again? So he wants to hear some of that. Speculation. So I disappointed him. I said, you know... We don't do that. It's just Bhagavad Gita as it is. Krishna says, surrender unto me, and it means surrender unto Krishna. Doesn't mean something else. Are you ready to surrender to Krishna? No. I'm ready for some interpretation, but not to surrender to Krishna. But Sankhya philosophy is not for the purpose of, you know, titillating the speculative fancies of speculators, nor is it to simply bring about detachment, nor is it to merge with the impersonal Brahman. Because what is called, in this fifth chapter, there's a verse Krishna says, what is called renunciation is the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme. Because you can't be renounced without being attached to something. Detachment from something means attachment to something else. Like this discussion we had this afternoon about, I have so many attachments. Well, become detached by developing attachment to Krishna. And if Krishna seems too remote, then the devotees of Krishna, the spiritual master and those who are very dear to Krishna, become attached to them. Because by doing so, you'll become attached to Krishna. Become attached to the activities of devotion. Because the activities of devotion, bhakti, is not different than Krishna. It's Radha, the superintendent of bhakti, and is absolute, just like Krishna is absolute. So become attached to that, and you'll become detached from the other. Even the subtle stuff. If one is very sincere and applies oneself to become attached to Krishna. That's the message. What is yoga is linking with the Supreme. And what is bhakti is linking with Krishna in devotion. And that's detachment. It's just the one is direct and the other is indirect. You know this example. If you ask a child, can you touch your nose? Sure, I can touch my nose. Is there some other way to touch your nose? That's the indirect method. This is the direct method. So bhakti is the direct method. Just like we read yesterday. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavan mam prapadyate. After bahu janma, many, many births of cultivation of knowledge, one may surrender unto Krishna. And when they surrender to Krishna, why do they surrender to Krishna? Krishna is everything. Vasudev sarvamiti. Some mahatmas are durlabha. It's very difficult to find such a person. Or this other verse of, after many, many lifetimes, the Bhagavatam verse this morning, after many lifetimes of performance of activity, that's prescribed activity, and one becomes gradually elevated through the modes of nature and becomes qualified. One may become so qualified that through contact with devotion, very quickly one comes to the position of taking shelter of Krishna. But without that touch of bhakti, it's countless lifetimes. So there must be some touch of bhakti, otherwise there's no yoga. Contact with the Supreme. Or another explanation is in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila Dev teaches Devahuti, what's the subject that he's teaching her? Sankhya. But so how does Sankhya become, because he's an incarnation, right? Kapila Dev is an incarnation. So why is he teaching impersonal philosophy? He's not teaching impersonal philosophy. He's teaching knowledge and detachment, and then in the detached state, the process of meditation, because he teaches during Satya Yoga, where Kritiye Dhyayato Vishnu, meditation is the process in Satya Yoga. So it's meditation upon the source of everything, Krishna. And in that state of complete absorption and meditation upon Krishna, this engagement of devotional service from within the heart. Well, my dear devotees, we don't have that capacity. We don't have that capacity. Just hearing Prabhupada say in a lecture, we're just listening, we close our eyes and meditate. And what do we meditate upon? In this age of Kali, it's all the sinful activities that we've seen, you know, in our face. He was describing Ajamila. How is someone going to engage in the meditation process who is been exposed to so much contamination. So we need purification. So, but in Satyuga, it's different. The process of meditation, where one lives 100,000 years, may be able to have that fixed mind and in that state of absorption upon Krishna, detached altogether from any configuration of matter, absorbed in meditation upon Krishna, engage in devotional service to Krishna within the heart by meditation. But we're doing it by our direct activity. And by so doing, the senses become purified, the mind becomes purified, the heart becomes purified. So our chanting along with the practical activities of devotional service is our process. Prabhupada's explanation in the purport is that the real purpose of philosophical speculation or philosophical research is to find the ultimate goal of life. The ultimate goal of life is self-realization. So Sankhya goal is self-realization, and the Bhakti goal is from the position of self-realization. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma nasochachina kaṃsati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. The process of devotional service begins from the spiritual platform. Although we're unqualified, to say the least, the process of bhakti is so merciful that at once we're elevated to the spiritual platform just by engaging in devotional service to Krishna. That's really merciful, most merciful. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is honored for being so merciful that he's giving that which no other incarnation has ever even offered before. Krishna prema. Without qualification. Krishna had a qualification, surrender unto me. Lord Chaitanya didn't even give that qualification. Just take it. Huh? Love of God, please take it in the form of chanting the holy name. Huh? That's his gift. And it's required that as we follow the bhakti process, that we become attached to Krishna. Of course, we have to be clear to identify who is Krishna and the shelter of Krishna. And by that attachment to Krishna, detachment from the rest will come. Here's a case in point. I've said this a number of times, but it's nice. It's when Prabhupada began the Hare Krishna movement in America, he didn't begin with giving detachment rules. He began with three things. Lots of chanting of Hare Krishna, little philosophy, and lots of prasadam. And after weeks and weeks and weeks of lots of chanting, maybe you've seen the videos of these devotees, you know, on some kind of drug or something or other, like, you know, but, you know, dancing and chanting and philosophy and lots of prasadam. At some point, the devotees approached Prabhupada and said, Swamiji, aren't there some restrictions that we should be following? And Prabhupada's reply was, yes. I'll give them to you tomorrow. And so in his own handwriting, he gave the four regular principles. But that's not where he started. He didn't start with detachment. He started with attachment to Krishna. And devotees became attached to Krishna through attachment to him. And through him, they came to know who is Krishna. And became attached to Krishna. And gave their lives to him. And their lives to serving Krishna. Because Prabhupada's life was the life of serving Krishna. So through bhakti, detachment comes. Because real detachment means attachment to something. Prabhupada gives the example of a child. If a child is holding on to, let's say, a piece of broken glass, very dangerous. If any mother sees a child with a piece of broken glass in their hand, let me have that. And they try to take the thing from the child. What does the child do? Or louder. So, mothers know what to do. They take something that rattles or something that glitters and hold it up and shake it and shine it. And... but to take that other something, they have to let go of the something they have a hold of. Mothers are very intelligent. But they also have experience trying to take something from a child's hand. Just forget it. Scream. But so attraction to something superior makes attraction to something inferior very easy. But that same principle is described elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, where rasovarjam rasopyasya param drishtva navartate. You try to give up a lower taste, it's very difficult. An attachment or a habit or some conditioning, it's very difficult. But develop a higher taste is very easy. My experience of travel in India, in America they don't serve meals with air travel. But in India they have to have a meal. Even if it's like two segments, it's two meals. And another newspaper. I mean, they know what the customers are addicted to. It's the tongue and reading newspapers. So when they go through the aisle, the stewardess says, veg or non-veg? And they're expecting you to say one or the other. So my answer is, no, thank you. They go, what? I'll take some water, please. Oh, here's some water. But, you know, it's not like, oh, I'd like some of that and some of that. It's no thank you. And it's not because, oh, it's just a rule. It's just no thank you. If it's not prepared by the devotee and offered to Krishna, it's no thank you. Whatever it is, no thank you. Oh, can I give you some of this and some of that? No thank you. I brought my own, thank you. Would you like some? Later, I'll come back later. What kind of samosas do you have? But the Hare Krishna movement, ISKCON or the Hare Krishna movement, has become very prominent in India. I mean, since I've been in India so far, each time I've gotten on a plane, at least one of the stewards or stewardesses, as I'm passing by, they pretend like, you know, the other ones aren't watching. They want to make sure the other ones aren't watching, but they say, Hare Krishna. Yes. And one of them was a devotee. Is a practicing devotee from somewhere. He got me a nice big bottle of water. He said, just don't tell anybody. Because he wasn't supposed to give out the big one. He was supposed to give out the little baby ones. Anyway. When there's a higher taste, it's very easy to say no to some other thing. Our other attachments and things that our life was made up of and, you know, all that stuff that called material existence. It's very easy to let go of it when there's a higher taste. And that's what's being described in this fifth chapter. Devotional service is that higher taste. And automatically, the fruit of analytical study, which is detachment, is a subset. It's included. So one can do the direct method, one can do the indirect method. It's easier this way. In that sense, they're both the same. But one is direct and the other is indirect. But they both end up in surrender to Krishna. That's the end game. That's the essence. Surrender unto Krishna. Okay. Any discussion?
As you were saying, both end the same. Is it compulsory that they have to contact a pure devotee to get that Vasudeva Sarvamiti, or without?
To get the which?
Vasudeva Sarvamiti consciousness. Or without the pure devotee's contact also, Sankhya Yogi, can he come to that stage?
How is it possible? Yeah. Contact with a pure devotee is necessary. Otherwise you'll come to some other conclusion. Just like, you know, how many translations of Bhagavad Gita are there? A lot of them. But without contact with a pure devotee giving his Bhaktivedanta purports, how many devotees are there that have read Bhagavad Gita, from reading Bhagavad Gita? Where are there all the devotees? And persons who read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, they become devotees just from reading his Bhagavad Gita. I've met people in different parts of the world that they never met a devotee other than reading Prabhupada's books. And they're chanting 16 rounds and offering all their food and, you know, reciting slokas and having Mangal Arati. But they've never been in the association, you know, live association, physical proximate association, just from reading Prabhupada's books. And do it the other way around. How many people are scholars of Bhagavad Gita and they're not devotees? But yes, it requires contact with pure devotee.
Maharaj, chanting, jab chanting karta hu to mera dhyan chanting mein nahi jata aur kahin jata hai to.
What you saying? No. How come? That's a statement. What's the question? How to steady the mind when chanting? That's the question?
जब chanting करते हैं तो ध्यान कहीं भटकता रहता है chanting में.
You follow?
तो मन को किसे लगाना है महाराज?
Same thing. Just making a statement. So what's the question? Huh?
How to fix my
intent? Practice. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nanyagamino. Bhagavad Gita 8.8. Practice. So what happens if you're chanting and the mind is somewhere else? What's Krishna's instruction in Bhagavad Gita? You bring the mind back. Then it goes over there. And then what's the instruction? You bring the mind back. And then it goes over there. You bring the mind back. Abhyasa. Continue. Bring the mind back. We discussed this the other day. This, and by that practice, the mind becomes accustomed to coming back to Krishna, or staying with Krishna, being present with Krishna, by practice. Even the mind is chanchala, very restless. Continue to practice and frame your life in the quality of goodness. It makes it much easier. You know, aside from when you're chanting, the other things in your life should be purposefully of the quality of goodness. What you eat, how you speak, how you dress, how you treat other people, compassion, cleanliness, regulation, detachment, honesty, goodness. Frame your life in the qualities of goodness and practice bringing the mind to Krishna. Put that in the center, and surrounding the center is a life of goodness. and keep practicing. You want to hear something encouraging? You have to think about it, huh? Prabhupada, Giriraj Maharaj, told a little story that he was with Srila Prabhupada. Maybe some of you have been in Bombay, in Prabhupada's quarters in Bombay, up in one of the two towers, the guest houses, and Prabhupada had the top floor. So in the early morning hours, Prabhupada would chant his japa, and Giriraj Maharaj was chanting japa with him. And then suddenly Prabhupada stopped. And Giriraj Maharaj stopped. And Prabhupada said, "It took me 30 years to perfect my chanting." And Giriraj Maharaj shared this with us. He said, "I was thinking, wow, 30 years. And now Giriraj Maharaj has been chanting for maybe 40 years. He's thinking, wow, if I could have perfected my chanting in 30 years. So how old are you? What's your age? 40. 1-4. I was going to say, you don't look 40 to me. So if you can perfect your chanting by the time you're 44, Haribo! And between now and then, keep practicing. Keep your life always in the quality of goodness and bring the mind to Krishna. Wherever the mind goes, bring the mind to Krishna. And here, lots of nice descriptions of Krishna so that the mind is energized, thinking, yeah, Krishna. Krishna, he's so attractive. Krishna this, Krishna that. And when you come before the deity, you can offer prayers to Madan Mohan. My dear Madan Mohan, you're the attractor of Cupid. Please attract my mind unto you. And Radharani, you're the attractor of the attractor of Cupid. So please give your mercy and help me become attracted to Krishna. Do that for the next 30 years. Then ask your question. Okay. Someone else?
Maharaj, as you told in the class, to attachment a higher person or higher taste, we can easily overcome the lower modes. So, attachment towards Guru Maharaj will bring from cultivating attachment to mentors?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay? That was a triple yes. Although I'm getting higher taste gradually, at the same time I am maintaining my previous non-devotional tendencies. How can I come out of this? Answer, let go. Oh, let go. Part of the thing with, you know, the psychological, if I let go, Arjuna says it in Bhagavad Gita. If I take up this process that you're recommending for me, I'll have nothing. And supposing I don't reach the goal, then I'll be nowhere. I won't be here or there. Like a riven cloud. So Krishna's answer is no, it's not like that. It's whatever advancement you make, it's permanent. It's not you're with nothing. You're with some spiritual progress that's permanent. Permanent. Nothing in this world is permanent. Nothing in this world is permanent. Whatever it is that you have, wait a while. It's gone. Youth, beauty, money, friends, home, whatever it is, wait a while. It's gone. Whatever it is. So something that's permanent, that's valuable. How to undergo a deep study of Bhagavad Gita. I'm going to give this one to you. Come to his Bhagavad Gita classes and I've heard his classes are very good. So come every day. And if you miss a class, hear the recording and then you can catch up. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.